Welcome to Talks with the Feminine. I'm Annie Taylor, and today I'm joined by Catherine, who is a mum of four little big people, we were saying. And she's a naturopath with a special interest in pregnancy and birth and the postpartum period, as well as children's health. And she owns Acorn and Oak in Ballarat, if you are familiar, which I think a lot of people are, I must say. I feel like there's been quite a few people I've interviewed who are like, oh, you're talking to Catherine. That's so exciting. So welcome. Thanks for joining.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for asking me on.
Oh, well, as I say, I was, you know, even Whitney, who I spoke to last week, said to me, I can't wait to hear that one. So I was like, oh, that's good. That's
lovely.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I think you've made a lot of difference to a lot of lives.
That's so lovely. Yeah. That's so lovely to hear. Yeah, I think that my perspective on it is helping to hold space for women to remember their power. So it sounds so simple, but it can be really hard, you know, especially in this, you know, in the world that we're currently living in that is still, you know, a patriarchy, although it's changing.
That we do
remember, you know, that intuition and that inner knowing that we all have. And for me, I feel like my purpose for this lifetime is about holding space for others so that they can reconnect in with their true selves, I guess is what I'd say. Yeah.
Oh, it's like, yeah, like you're right. It sounds sort of simple in a single sentence, but it's quite a mission. I can
it's a journey, and it's only now, you know, I'm 41 that I'm really, you know, really getting my teeth into that, you know. I knew that I wanted to be a naturopath. Like, I started studying when I was 18 years old, so I knew that that's what I wanted to do, and you know, I'm really drawn, and I love, you know, my herbs and you know, but that deeper connection to Mother Earth has been a journey more recently that I've been on in the last few years. Yep. You know, when I was training, we were known as the brown bottle herbalists because, you know, we sit there in a classroom learning about these herbs. And if we were lucky, we went for one of our herb subjects to Southern Light Herb Farm in Malden, right? Yeah. And so that was it. We didn't see herbs up close and we didn't get to know them. And so I didn't even really start to connect in with them until I moved from Melbourne to Ballarat. So, you know, 3.5 years ago, where, you know, I'm walking along suddenly going, oh my goodness, look at you, elderberry, you're right there. Look at you, hawthorn, you know.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, St. John's Wort. So it's been really lovely getting to know the region's herbs that grow.
Yeah, that's quite amazing. I feel like, that's the thing. I don't know, that's so fascinating. You just be like, have such a broad knowledge of these things now that you've been. Wow.
So yes, I know those herbs, but I feel like, and this is, you know, I will be bringing out a course soon for those budding herbalists who want to add an extra dimension to it. So, you know, each month it will be a herb that we'll be focusing on, and, you know, it's taking it the next step. So sure, there's going to be recipes and you can play around with the tincture, which is the liquid form and the dried form and maybe even the fresh form if it's growing near you. But then let's connect in with it. Let's do, you know, a shamanic drum journey, you know, which like a guided meditation but a little bit deeper, where you get to connect in with the herb and hear what message it has for you so that it becomes more personalized.
Yeah. So I'll take you back a bit. So you said you trained as a naturopath, is that right, at the, you know, when you were 18, or what's your background? Tell us your story, how you got to here.
So how did I get from here to here?
Get from so there to here.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, that's a long one, isn't it? So yeah. I didn't finish year 12. I realized halfway through year 12 that I was doing subjects that I thought I should be doing, you know, like that, but I wasn't really connected to. And so I made the decision to leave school, and I took a couple of months off, and I ripped apart one of our garages. That was like my cathartic experience. And then I enrolled in a TAFE course, and I was thinking of going on, you know, I knew that I wanted to help people. I knew that it was, you know, was it a vet? Was it, you know, nursing, you know, how did it look? And it was actually my mum that went, Catherine, look, there's this open day, you know, back then it was called the Melbourne College of Natural Medicine. And, you know, you've always been drawn to nature, and, you know, I think that this would suit you. So I went in and had an interview, and, you know, I got started. It took me a while to finish, because I fell pregnant with Chloe, my eldest, who's now 21. So I had her in the March and turned 20 in the May. So, you know, I stopped studying for a bit, and then I did it by correspondence, and then I went back on campus. So it was a journey to even study that.
Yeah. And then so how did you find being a young mum in that sort of, I guess, you know?
So I was lucky in some ways, you know, my mum, you know, so I was so young, so I didn't have lots of people telling me different birth stories. So, yeah. You know, mum stories were, you know, like she was 18 minutes before I was born, you know, like it was quick and easy. My older sister's, you know, was still pretty good. It was 8 hours, but, you know, she had, you know, an enema, and she was shaved, but that had changed by the time I was born. So, you know, I for me, it was like you just give birth, you know, like it's normal and natural. So even at, you know, 19 years old, it was like, I'm pregnant. Well, I'm just going to go to the Mercy Birthing Centre. So, you know, I booked in there and you know, had Chloe there. So I got the only male midwife in the hospital when I had Chloe. And I remember saying to my mum, I really just don't want to be naked in front of people when I'm giving birth. And she's like, you don't have to be, Catherine, but just trust me. You won't care who's in the room when you're giving birth. And sure enough, so, you know, the male midwife, Peter, was fantastic. And he did say to me afterwards, wow, if I had known you were going to birth like that, I would have asked to film you, you know, to show other people, because that was pretty amazing, Catherine. And so I was like, oh, really? You know, it's just that thing of having that trust, because I didn't know, I didn't know that it could be any other way.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah. And that's what I started to learn throughout my journey was, you know, of going on and having my other two kids at that point. And then I decided that I wanted to study midwifery, and I went back to study nursing and midwifery. And because I wanted at that point to combine naturopathy with midwifery and be an independent home birth midwife. And so I took time off to have my fourth baby, and things had changed in the system, and I decided that I was happier not to continue to study.
Yeah.
But you know, that's always been my aim, is to empower women, to help them remember their power.
So what did you feel was the shift in the system that was really, I guess,
there was ramping up of home birth midwives being deregistered,
right?
And just within the course, there were some changes that ended up being deal breakers for me. That I went, you know what, I'm not. I don't think, you know, because I would have had to have worked in the system for 3 years.
Yeah,
and I'm still really grateful for I learned, and my experiences, and that certainly helped, you know, understand the system better, and to be able to provide, because, you know, I was in you know, three and a half years in of a, or just under, because I'd gone back, done one subject, so of a 4-year double degree. So, you know, I learned a lot. So it was good. It wasn't a waste of time.
No, it's funny how you get a lot out of stuff, even though.
That's right.
Yeah.
I don't have paper. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. No paper, but you got a lot of learn. Yeah. So you're talking about, you know, I guess offering, how did you put it? Sort of inviting women to find their own power, or empowering women to find their own power. So, I guess, how do you find you approach that now? And what do you love most about that as a skill, I suppose?
For me, I guess it's about asking them questions. Mm. You know, you tell me what it is that you want. You tell me what you feel your baby wants, you know, connecting, you know, helping them to connect in with themselves and their baby, and just reminding them, you know, that mother's intuition is really important.
It's relevant,
and to always go with that. And, you know, each hospital has different protocols, and I know why they're there, you know, but that doesn't mean that one size fits all. So when we hop on that conveyor belt, when we enter the hospital system, if we're entering the hospital system, then it's knowing that we still have choices within that. And it's about asking, what is it that the mum wants, that the dad wants within that?
And what's relevant to their values, I guess. Yeah. But, you know, it's funny. I think I had a client who was also a client of yours a while ago. Mm. And she spoke a lot to her baby throughout labor and birth.
Yep.
And it just, I wondered, you know, I feel like that kind of really powerful connection.
Yeah.
Is that something you often see and work with? Is that, I mean,
there's all different women that I see. Yeah. Some women are not interested in that at all, and they're coming to me for optimal health for them and their baby. And so, you know, I can be quite medicalized in some ways, you know, in terms of blood tests, and I'm wanting optimal nutritional status for mum while she's growing this gorgeous bub of hers.
Yeah.
So that's really important. And for some, that's all they want. And for others, it is a deeper connection. So it might be that we go on shamanic journeys, you know, with my drum, that we go in and connect in with bub.
Yeah.
So I guess it's a combination of different things. And I really am guided in that moment by what's being presented in the room and how I feel that I can best assist mum and bub as well.
And do you find you have an intuition for that? Because I've heard a few people say that about you, that you just have this vibe about you that opens women. I think it's just something some people have, you know. It's like, you know, without even really knowing how it happens. It's not a learned trait.
No. I feel like it's something that we can all work on, though, like that we can learn to develop more and more. And for me, it's certainly ramped up a lot in the past few years. You know, I've always been interested in our stories, you know, of who we are and how we came to be who we are in this moment. So, you know, you know, I guess, and being in practice for, you know, over 17 years, I know now that unless I shift the emotional stuff, unless I get to the core of the emotion as to what's going on, no matter how many supplements I give, it won't shift until I shift the emotional. And that's the same thing with pregnancy, you know, like if we don't clear the stuff that's coming up during pregnancy, because I speak through personal experience, you know, every single pregnancy, you know, for me, the pregnancy is the really hard bit. Birth is like a walk in the park for me. I can,
yeah.
You know, it's like, yeah. Oh yeah, no, this, I've got this, this is good. You know, it's, yeah. It's the pregnancy that, you know, brings up so much emotional stuff to the surface. And I know that, you know, I thought that it would get easier. But it doesn't, because through each pregnancy, we're becoming the mum that we need to be for that particular baby. Yeah. And so it's just each time for me, you know, it's a deeper opening to, you know, my stuff, my stories, and what it is that I need to drop, you know, what it is that I need to release in order to be able to birth my baby.
Yeah, yep. And the new version of yourself in order
exactly.
to be. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's that sort of conscious movement through pregnancy. That's funny that it's harder than the that brings me back. Did you think you found sort of your first pregnancy the easiest as a result of that, because you had less story to kind of move through? Or
just completely unconscious to it, you know, like I, you know, I think about the things coming up and I just wasn't very conscious to it. So, by Alfie, my fourth, I was like actively going, right, this is a whole lot of magic stuff happening here. Mm-hmm. And where is this dialogue happening? Where can I find this, you know, in written words that I can connect in with? And it wasn't, there wasn't much around.
No.
And that, you know, and then, you know, it was Jane Hardwick Collins, and that was the stuff that I connected in with most, who has the shamanic school of womancraft. So I was like, oh, look, somebody knows, somebody gets me what's the hell is happening to me, you know,
because
it's big. And you know, I was seeing my naturopath at that time throughout my pregnancy, because, you know, I was like, I can't do my own health, you know.
No,
I need to hand me over to somebody else. And so I was lucky to you know, to be held throughout that by another who understood that as well. You know, the emotional stuff that was coming up, the stories that needed to come up to be released. Yep.
Yeah. So what do you find, like, well, we can definitely crack open a bit about Jane and when did you become involved with so was that in that pregnancy that you got involved with the School of Shamanism and Craft?
No, it was so Alfie would have been, I think, three years ago when I started that journey. So I, you know, I was familiar with it. Like the work that we were doing, I mean, you know, I birthed a drum, which I had been wanting to do for years. And oh my goodness, you know, what an amazing opportunity. And for me, the connection that has continued to bring, and, you know, that's part of, you know, what one of my offerings is, you know, the 2-day shamanic drum making workshops, because the insight that we gain, you know, because how we do one thing, we do everything in life, you know. And so it sounds strange to some people, but the act of birthing a drum is like we are birthing ourselves again, and we're birthing our children if we have children, or, you know, the way that we birth our projects. So it all becomes in our face, what I say, you know. And so and so for me, you know, it's it's that doubt that comes up at some point throughout the birthing process, you know. And that was passed down, you know, from my mum, from her doubt of not trusting herself throughout her pregnancy. Yeah. So anything that I do, whether it's birthing my children or birthing Acorn and Oak, I can do it quickly and easily, right? But the lead up to it, you know, there is always some sense of self-doubt. So, you know, and then, you know, of course, you've got this beautiful sacred shamanic tool that you can use, you know, to connect in with the drumbeat, you know, of Mother Earth. You know, we have this shamanic experience through birthing the drum, but then we've got it for life, you know, this beautiful that can be used as meditation, you know, so many different uses for it as well.
Talk us through what I guess birthing the drum looks like from the outside. How
does the workshop
sure. That sort of thing.
Generally speaking, I find once you make the commitment to birthing the drum, right, then you've already begun your shamanic journey of connecting in with it. And quite frequently, you know, I use kangaroo hides. Your kangaroo will appear to many people in their dreams. So that when it comes to the ceremony of everyone arriving and sitting down in circle and, you know, calling in the directions and, you know, all of that, you know, when we put the drum hides out, people are just like, yep, that's mine there. Or the other way, like, oh my goodness, I don't know which one is mine. And that's all part of that story as well. And it's just beautiful to watch the unraveling of that, you know, like of people having those insights into themselves. And, you know, and each time I hold the workshop, I, of course, you know, like I am both teacher and student. So I learn so much as well throughout the experience. So, you know, it's a sacred container, you know, it's about all of us, you know, listening with the ears of our hearts to each other. And, you know, we do go through a journey of asking each other questions about our birth. So I say, you know, try to get as much information as you can about your birth from your mum, if she's alive. You know, of course, we've got some people whose parent mum's dead or, you know, they've been adopted so they don't know anything on some level.
Yeah.
But things always drop in throughout the process. So it literally is, you know, we're sitting there and we're cutting out the hide, and even as I said, you know, like that, all of it is part of it.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Like,
yeah, it's
cutting hide is part of it. Soaking it overnight, you know, like it really is like your pregnancy and in the birth phase. And then once you birth your drum, you know, I talk about being gentle with yourself for the next, you know, few days, because this is the postpartum phase. There's definitely a lot. There's a lot of oxygen. There's a lot of oxytocin in that room by the end of the 2 day workshop. It's pretty powerful.
Is there, what's the symbolism of the drum for the sake of
opening? So it's the feminine. Mm-hmm. It's a container of life. It's, you know, the oldest musical instrument, you know, that and women. Women were the ones who would play those drums. And so, and it literally is that drum beat, like how that drum works, the beat is the same vibration that the earth moves at as well. So when we're doing that, when we're drumming, we are connecting into the mother. And for me, when I say the mother, you know, Mother Earth, you know, so for me, my deeper work, you know, is helping people to reconnect to Mother Earth, because by doing that, they will reconnect with themselves. Mm. Yeah. And they'll.
And then move forward. So speaking of birthing different things, you mentioned birthing acorn and oak, and how did that come to be after, you know, you'd been working for however many years and you're in Melbourne and.
Yeah. Oh no. So I was in Ballarat and I was working with Howard at, in East Street. He's a lovely man. He's got a clinic up there, but it was actually on my first shamanic drum journey that the information dropped in of your opening a herbal dispensary, Catherine. And I remember coming out of the drum journey going, and no, I'm not doing that. And it was like, no, yes, you are. Yes, you are. And I'm like, no, there's too many reasons why that just is not a good idea. and I don't think about, you know, like everybody's going to see, you know, this deeper fear of stepping completely into my power and being seen and, you know, being called a witch potentially, you know.
Yes.
That's I would have been, you know, if a herbalist and a midwifery, you know, like that's all we would have been called witches. So
yes, yeah,
it's this thing on some level of being seen clear as day, saying this is what I am and this is who I do, this is who I am and what I do even. Yeah. So yeah, it literally took a couple of months for Acorn and Oak from the inception of that idea dropping into us, me opening the doors. It was really fast.
That is really fast. Yeah.
Yep.
But you just knew that was the path somehow. Yeah.
Yeah. And things flowed so easily. And, you know, I think part of our stuff, and it's the same thing when we're birthing, right, is that we need to get out of our own way. You know, it's going to be our head stuff. It's going to be our mind that gets in the way. And it's the same thing with any project or anything that we do. It's us that gets in the way. So, you know, it's about, Catherine, get out of your head and into your body. You know, get out of your head and into your body and just let things flow. And they did very easy.
So you found a good location and just started
just like that super quickly.
And now you from the outside it seems that you've achieved some really, really great things through that process. And how do you feel about it now, I suppose, now that you're a couple of years down the track? And
I love it. I you know, I'm not in the dispensary anymore, you know, front of house, unless, you know, one of my staff members are unable to work. I'm just seeing people one-on-one and working on some bigger projects and, you know, bigger workshops and things like that. But I was in there yesterday, you know, and it's always so beautiful being in there and connecting in with people and them saying things like, oh, wow, like I feel so nurtured just by walking through the doors. Like, and that was my aim, you know. I wanted to have a space where people felt like they were held, a container, where they were held and they were cared for, where they could just be themselves.
Yeah. And it sort of creates that safety for their feminine, I suppose, when you're out in the world trying to be in your masculine all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so that's a really big thing, you know. And I certainly can sit a lot in my masculine, and it's something that I've had to work really consciously on to connect in more with.
Yeah.
And value it, you know. That there is, you know, instead of the doing, it's the being that is actually really important.
Yeah.
You know?
And you were saying, you know, obviously it's quite a masculine society. But you were saying you feel that shifting. And I guess I thought I'll ask you your thoughts on that. Do you feel a shift or
Just even with, you know, even in just the lockdown that's occurred, you know, the forced stopping, you know, that people are being invited, you know, and for some people it's more hectic because it's harder because we're holding space for our kids while they're trying to school as well as trying to work. But there are times there, you know, that there's the being, there's a lot more being and a lot less doing. And so many more people are now coming to me saying, Catherine, I need, you know I want to change. I know that I am unhappy with what I am doing in my life. And, you know, I need your help to know how I can move forward, you know. And so that's where I guess, you know, the rituals and the ceremony become more important.
Yeah.
Because that we have lost that throughout our time, you know, those initiations, you know, because we don't live in community how we used to live in community, you know. So that whether we're consciously aware of it or not, you know, we're cycling all the time, you know. So whether that's, you know, the 24-hour cycling that we do, whether it's our menstrual cycle, whether it's the seasonal cycles, you know, if we can connect in with those, then we are connecting in more with ourselves, more with our intuition, and more with our knowing of what that next step is.
Yeah.
So I don't have the answers for people.
No.
I just have some tools to help them find their own answers.
And it's definitely more of a presence now, I suppose, having those tools as, I mean, I still think there's sort of a numbing out to it, but yeah, it's kind of
it's shifting.
Yeah, and it's so lovely.
yeah, it is. It is indeed.
This horrible kind of, I mean, the lockdown's been amazing and horrible and
yeah.
I don't know. Going back, I saw you posted something about going back to the hearth as being like an imagery. It's funny how that happens, how you go back to that sort of place and realize that what you're doing isn't quite right.
But it's all that journey, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, like, and it's just about having, you know, for me, like the path that I've been on, gosh, it's been hard at times, you know.
Yeah.
Like, you know, but I am grateful for it because of the learnings, you know, what I've learned from all of that, and that helps me in what I do and how I hold space. I feel, you know, like I've had postpartum depression and anxiety, and I've been there, and you know, felt so low that, you know, I couldn't get out of bed, you know, like I, you know, it was just awful, and
yeah.
And you know, all those stories were very big for me, you know, that needed to be cleared. So and through doing the rituals, through doing the ceremony, through understanding myself more, it means that I can shed that skin, right?
Yeah.
But still hold on to the lessons that I learned to help others.
Yeah, because it's almost like, the pain is the messenger before you get to the actual point. Yeah. So, oh my gosh, I feel like I could talk about all of this for hours and pick it apart.
I love so much. Yep.
I guess, you know, I was going to ask you a bit about, in working with women and working with herbs, have you found, is there, what's the best way of putting it? I mean, are there things that are almost your go-to at this point? Have you got, you know, is it very specific to a particular person? Is it, you know, how
definitely,
does it all unpack?
Yeah, it's definitely particular to a person. I've certainly, you know, like in broad terms, you know, at the moment we're on high rotation of those nervous system herbs, of those adaptogens that help our body deal with stress better.
Yeah.
And we need those because if we're in that fight or flight or freeze mode, you know, we're in the sympathetic nervous system, we're not going to be able to unpack anything because we're too busy, as I talk about, you know, running away from that saber-toothed tiger.
Yes.
But, you know, our body doesn't know the difference between a saber-toothed tiger and financial stress or, you know, relationship issues. Our body just responds in the same way no matter what. So, you know, certainly lots of those herbs are my favorites because it allows things to just drop down a little bit. Then we can start to get to the deeper stuff and work on the emotional stuff. And that's definitely where I've found the biggest shifts to occur. And definitely, you know, herbs are my favorite allies to be having because they work physically, you know, we've got all that evidence to back up their active constituents, but then they're working energetically as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they're pretty beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, they sure are.
Yeah.
But for me, you know, it's about as I said, you know, teaching women to understand themselves better. You know, I talk about the seasons that we move through in our cycles. Yeah. You know, so that first week, you know, if we're taking a 28-day cycle,
yeah,
you know, that we've got a week for each season. So the first day that we're bleeding, you know, is winter, and we're in hibernation and we're in our cave, and that's not when we're wanting to socialize. We're wanting to be quiet and reflective. And back when we used to live in community, you know, we would have all been in our red tent together, all of the women. And that's when, you know, actually the men would defer to us for the answers of where, you know, where the buffalo were, where were the bison, where were the animals that we had to track, because the women, you know, had that connection with that intuition, and we had that quiet time, and we would be able to connect in with that. And we've lost that. So I talk to women, you know, about reconnecting in with that. So whether that means that just for that first night that you have your period, it's telling your partner, if you've got your partner, you know, okay, I'm off duty for dinner, or as soon as the kids go to bed, you're cleaning the house. If that's okay, I'm going to have a bath. I'm going to have, you know, sit down. I'm going to watch Netflix. I'm going to journal, whatever it is that feels supportive and nurturing and nourishing for you is what I say, you know, to do that. And then, you know, we're moving into our spring phase. So our bleeding stopped, and, you know, it's like we're little shoots, you know, popping up from the ground. We're popping our head out of the cave, you know, we're going, okay, yep, what are we going to do here? What seed are we going to plant for this next cycle? You know, what is it that I want to do for this next coming month? And then summer, you know, summer is the, you know, peak fertility, birds and the bees, everything's in full bloom.
I love all this imagery.
Yeah, it's so rich, you know, like, you know, this, we're ovulating. It's like, come here, I want you, you know, like it's, that's when we're having our meetings. That's when we're wanting to socialize and have get togethers and things like that. And then, you know, as we move into that autumn phase, you know, that's that classic time where I see, you know, a lot of people who go, Catherine, I'm so angry. I've, you know, this PMS, I'm yelling, I'm screaming, I'm angry. And I'm like, and your self-care is not high enough. You know, if this autumn phase is when we're struggling, right?
Yeah.
Then we need to look back at that other phase of our cycle and go, and what were we doing in spring and summer? Were we being looked after? Were we looking after ourselves? You know, like, you know, of course we've got estrogen and progesterone dropping around there, you know, hormones, you know, Jane Hardwick Collins talks about, you know, that estrogen being the hormone of accommodation. It's how can I look after you, my family, my lovely ones, you know, no, I'll do all the cooking. It's all okay. By the time we come around, you know, the estrogen progesterone's dropping and we're like, what the hell? Am I the only one who picks up all that off the ground? You know, like,
yes.
I can't stand this anymore, you know, but it's all for me. It's, they're clues as to if we're feeling really stressed, what is it that needs to change, you know?
Because it's all intuitive, but it's not. But we've all been trusted, taught to not quite trust our own intuition around these things.
Well, so. Certainly. And we're taught to be that classic summer ovulation, you know, the young, you know, that young woman, and be like that all the time. And the feminine is not that. We are like the water. We can be calm and it can be then, you know, huge waves. But understanding that is what the feminine is, and seeing the beauty in that is what's really important. That we're not stuck in this one mode all the time.
Yeah. It would be very boring if we actually were.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. And that's how you end up with the story of being the crazy girl when you're just moving.
Exactly. Yeah. And so that's a really big thing that we need to shift in society, is being perceived as that crazy pre-menstrual, oh, have you got your period? You know, that needs to shift.
Yeah.
And we need to educate people about that and reclaim the power, like, you know, of how lucky and how fortunate, you know, like what an honor it is that we get to bleed every month and we get to release all that no longer serves us, you know, on a monthly basis. So, and I see a lot of women who don't have that relationship with their period because it's painful as all hell. You know, like I see so many with endometriosis or who haven't been diagnosed but then go on to get the diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And so through, you know, making dietary changes and using different herbs and nutritional supplements, then they can become pain-free so that they can, you know, drop into actually, oh, wow, how, yeah, okay, this is quite powerful, isn't it, this cycle that we're here.
Yeah, it's a funny thing. I mean, I don't know. I remember my first ever period. I was so relieved. I felt the relief from my whole body just because I'd been in tension for all these months leading up to it. On this roller coaster. And I remember everyone thought I was a complete nut job because I was like, yay, I feel so different now. And I don't know, it just, it's a funny.
Oh, that's fantastic. So you already had, you were already quite connected and quite in tune with yourself. You could feel that difference, you know, that release, obviously, it felt for you potentially. I certainly remember, I can't remember which child it was, you know, where I didn't have a period. Maybe it was Chloe, you know, for 17 months. Mm. And I got my period and I'm just like, oh, yeah, I'm back. I am back because.
Yes.
I could, you know, this power, like I could feel, wow, like I can feel my power coming back, like something is shifting in me, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah, I really get that. I think it's only a shame that it's not more accepted as just
with
a general truth. And that, I mean, because we're so encouraged not to be angry, I suppose. You know, like anger is seen as this really negative emotion to have. It's like, it's so necessary in that whole process.
It is, you know, and I get that, you know, goodness, my anger is, you know, when I was younger was huge, was enormous, you know, and it's, you know, it's that thing of going, of realizing, you know, Catherine, it's not your anger, it's how you bring it to the other person that is the issue, you know. So it's this thing of welcoming all of that, you know, and that's been a big lesson as well, is welcoming our feelings and not trying to make them wrong, you know. Like I had somebody recently who was like, but Catherine, I shouldn't be feeling this way. I should just be able to do what I do all the time through my cycle.
Yeah.
I should just be able to cook all the meals, you know, I should be able to do all that. And you know, people who know me, as soon as I hear the word should. Right? Should, I go, oh, hang on, let's just get curious about that, you know, because it's generally a belief that's not ours that we're putting on top, we're imposing on ourselves.
Yeah. Where's so your should actually curious. Coming from?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And then also, but just that allowing of going, you know what? It's okay for me to feel angry. It's okay for me to feel so deeply sad that I want to be swallowed up by the earth, right? Mm. But the difference that I've realized is that if I just allow myself that, oh, it moves by so much faster than trying to fight myself.
Yeah. I actually think it almost like blocks up in a way. The more you just keep coming back to the same.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah.
For sure.
Oh,
so.
Yeah. So, and do you find those cycles and things, like obviously, you know, there's women who don't have menstrual cycles or who are postmenopausal or whatever.
So we cycle with the moon.
Yeah. And how do you find that sort of, I've always found that fascinating as an idea, the cycling with the moon. Do you find, is it often the same for everyone? Does it sort of and how do people get in?
So our dominant, if we are menstruating, then our dominant cycle will be our menstrual cycle.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's that thing of, you know, we're menstruating. So that's like the dark moon. So we're releasing all that no longer serves us. And then, you know, full moon is when we're ovulating.
Yeah.
And so that's when, you know, if we're doing things like that, then we're acknowledging and thanking for, you know, those seeds, those ideas that we've been nourishing and nurturing for half of our cycle. We're grateful. We're showing our gratitude for what's in full bloom. Generally speaking, you know, the ups and downs of the cycles, if we're postmenopausal, aren't anywhere near as intense as when we are menstruating. You know, instead of it, you know, being like really highs and lows potentially of when we're menstrual, when we're menstruating, you know, it's just the softer up and down of the moon.
Yeah.
If we've finished cycling.
Yeah. Wow.
And of course, the power and the wisdom that come with that, you know, that, you know, the different cycles. So, you know, we've got the young maiden or the young man, you know, in that early phase. And then, you know, the energy of that full moon is the mother and the father. And the energy of the autumn is the maga and the magus, you know. So,
yeah.
And then, of course, you've got the crone down the bottom and the wise man. So just the information, the cycling, the knowledge, you know, all of that wisdom that comes to us through each season, that it's to be celebrated, you know, instead of going, oh, I'm postmenopausal and, you know, goodness, some of the sexiest women that I see are postmenopausal women who are in their power. Do you know what I mean? You
yes,
know,
like absolutely. Yeah.
It's just like, oh wow, look at you. I can feel your energy, gorgeous being, you know? That's what I'm wanting, you know, to bring more and more of that, because society in general doesn't worship that. They only worship, you know, that peak ovulation young woman phase, you know.
Yeah, which kind of, it's a bit of a fallacy in a strange way, you know, the young woman image. It's like,
yeah,
I was having a discussion with someone the other day saying, yeah, no, that's not your sort of, that's not your peak sexiness,
no,
really at nope. all. No,
hell no.
No,
it's being comfortable in our body, you know, of embodying that wisdom and the knowing that comes as we get older, you know, like I'm the most comfortable that I've ever been in my body now, the most comfortable that I've ever been with my sexuality now, you know, as opposed to when I was younger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You haven't learned the lessons then in a way, you know.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you're feeling awkward.
Used your body for something like, you know, used is the wrong word, but, you know, like, I certainly think, you know, taking power off women after, you know, from them after they've had a baby is just very odd, you know, like what they've just done the most incredible thing.
You know, and that thing of, you know, I want, you know, ideally, you know, what I'd love to see is every single birthing mama, you know, to be looking like that goddess, because that is what they are, you know. And if she's not looking like that, then what the hell is going on?
Yeah.
You know, and you know,
who's that? That's a Michelle Odont quote or something as well. Is, you know, why do I think it is it him? I don't know, or it might be.
Yeah, what does he say?
I think it's a quote attributed to him. I just hope I get it wrong, but you know, if the birthing mother doesn't look like a look and feel like a goddess, then there's something very wrong going on in the birth space.
And either, you know, who needs to not be in the room, who needs to be in the room, you know, like what the hell is going on there?
Yeah.
But you know, it's such a lead up, you know, it's a lead up. And so how can we support our women, you know, throughout this journey so that they are empowered enough to ask the questions or to have the right people with them who can hold space for them.
During that
time.
Yeah. Because it's true. Disempowered birth, not birth that looks or doesn't look a certain way, but just the kind where power's completely gone out of the sails. It it does. It just feels odd and a bit wrong sometimes.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And that doesn't mean, you know, that doesn't mean that it has to be a home birth. You know, it's not what it looks like. And for me, there was a big learning around that when I had Alfie, my youngest, because I was like, oh, well, I'm studying midwifery. I want to be a home birth midwife. You know, my other three had been born in, you know, birth centers. Mm-hmm. But I was like, I'm going to have a home birth. And I could not shake this. You know, I was having dreams and this thing of there's something going on with the placenta. There's something that can happen with this placenta. And so I said to my home birth midwife, I can't, you know, like there's something going on here. I think I need to be in the hospital. I need to go to hospital. And so I was booked in for the Mercy midwife led program. Mm-hmm. And Alfie ended up being born at home. Right.
Yep.
Very, very quickly with my then husband catching him and then the placenta wouldn't come. And then, you know, I had to go to hospital and then, you know, a week later I had a hemorrhage and there was a huge, you know, 10 centimeter by 7 centimeter piece of placenta still there that was still, you know, had blood supply attached, you know, so. And that the body ended up reabsorbing that. So that was pretty amazing.
That's good. Yeah.
Yep. But, you know, so for me, that was a good lesson of not getting caught up of what a birth needs to look like. It's
in order to be,
So it's about the intuition and it's about listening to ourselves, listening, you know, for mum to listen to herself. Yeah. And so absolutely. Whether that's a planned cesarean, whether, you know, that's a home birth, whether that's, you know, whatever it is, it's what does mum want? And, you know, and sometimes it might be that throughout the journey of me being with them throughout the pregnancy that we work out that actually it's fear that we want in a cesarean. And then they can, you know, they go on to have a natural, you know, birth. But it's all just a journey that we go on that I am, you know, very privileged to be walking beside these women while they do that.
That's amazing. Well, look, I'll start to wrap up because we've almost been talking for an hour and I feel like I could go on for another three, but I better not, you know, finishing on that really beautiful point.
Yeah.
But thank you so much for joining me. It's been like a total blessing to get all your different angles on so many things. But yeah, it's I can see, you know, everyone always says it's just you give off such a lovely vibe and I'm getting all the vibes. Such open.
Oh, that's really
yeah.
I love it. I love it so much. Thank you very much for inviting me on.
Anytime. I feel like I'm seriously sitting here while you're talking, thinking about like five other topics I could totally talk to you about without it being like, oh, we can talk about, you know, it's like adolescence and child health and so many different things. Oh my gosh. But I won't do that today because I'll be here forever. And you probably want to go and enjoy the sun a bit more.
It was lovely. Thanks for inviting me on, Annie.
No worries. Thanks again. Okay. And thank you, gorgeous listeners. And we'll speak soon. Okay, bye.